This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Oh, yeah.
All the gangs here.
Were
you in Heckler?
Yes.
Dude, you were great. I was. You had longer hair than last time I saw you. Nice haircut. But
thank you.
I actually was surprised because I'm not really familiar with any of Jamie Kennedy's work. And I watched this movie, Heckler, on television the other night. I thought it was a great idea to confront the critics and, I don't know the movies that you were critical of, but you were so funny, and he interviewed these two teenagers that heckled him during a show,
yeah.
And it was hysterical because they were so brutally honest with him, and you were so brutally honest with him. It was great, man. It was great.
Hey, so how you doing?
I'm great. I'm so happy. These are like all film people here. I love this. This is like the highlight of my day, I promise you guys. There's some familiar film fans' faces around here.
So, question, your character essentially is babysitter. A madman.
He's basically what?
Babysitting a madman.
Correct, yeah.
I mean, literally. I mean, how did you wrap your head around this character?
I don't know. You know, I watched My Favorite Year a lot, and I watched Midnight Run a lot, and those Almost Famous. Those were kind of the three movies I would watch a lot to prepare. And a big correlation to me was I thought about what if I was 18 and with one of my heroes. And so I would often replace Aldous Snow in my head with Bill Murray or Martin Scorsese or something like that, and just imagine what it'd be like to be a young guy and getting to ask them any question you wanted or just be in awe of them, and you know, Neil Young, and I just kind of thought about my heroes and what it'd be like to be around them and get to spend time with them. The movie's kind of the ultimate fantasy in that way. Like, who hasn't fantasized about going on the road for 72 hours with your favorite rock star at some point in your life? You know, it's kind of like every kid's dream.
What rock star would it be for you?
Probably Neil Young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Jay-Z. I like Jay-Z a lot. I have a very eclectic film and music taste.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
Put those two together.
Mozart.
I think Willie Nelson would be fun.
Yeah, I love Philip Glass. There's a great documentary about Philip Glass I just watched. It was fantastic. Yeah.
I was going to say, I'm curious what the last week's been like for you. And just this nonstop promotional machine.
Honestly, it's been great, man. I was saying over there, you know, my year this year is like, Cyrus and Get Him to the Greek. And between those two films, I literally could not be more proud of them. So it is such a delight and blessing when a movie actually turns out good. I'm sure I'll be sitting in front of you guys one day with just a shitty, shitty movie on my hands. And I'm going to have to smile through a bunch of lies. But, you know, the fact that Get Him to the Greek and Cyrus are awesome, good movies, it's a joy to go out and talk to them and talk to people about them, because you're saying, hey, you know, I worked hard on this and it actually turned out good. And that's a, you know, I'm super lucky to have this job. I tell you guys every time, I'm super appreciative of that. And, you know, it's fun, and it's a good group of people, and it's been tiring, but it's been super enjoyable.
Well, I saw Cyrus at Sundance, and it's interesting that this movie and Cyrus are coming out a couple of months apart, because...
A couple of weeks apart.
Well, yeah, I guess it's a couple of weeks now at this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think if somebody said, what's a Jonah Hill character like?
Right.
Either of these two characters are what you might assume a Jonah Hill character is like. Is that important to you, to sort of have these films where you're playing something that isn't just sort of the foul-mouthed, wacky slacker kid, you know?
Right.
What I mean?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a really good question, because I think, you know, I've only starred in one other movie, which is Superbad, you know, and I'm a foul-mouthed, loud-mouthed, obnoxious, horny teenager in that movie, which is completely appropriate for that movie. And I think the misconception is because that's the only movie I've starred in, and that's just what I'm like as a human being. And I'm... Fortunately, that's not the case, you know. And since then, I've done, you know, a lot of like cameos and side characters and stuff, and have definitely probably been, you know, written off as one type of thing. And I understand that completely, and it totally makes sense. And I'd probably do the same thing. But the truth is I think judge me on this year and judge me on next year, because, you know, between Cyrus and this movie, I think both characters are completely unrecognizable from my character in Superbad or Knocked Up, you know, and I really appreciate that compliment, because even between these two movies, they're just don't seem like the same character at all. Like, they're unrecognizable from each other, and I'm really prideful in that. I worked really hard, and, you know, I could have sold out 1,000 times between now and Get Him to the Greek and Cyrus, and, you know, chose not to out of respect and appreciation for my career, which I value. And you know, next year, the same thing, doing Moneyball, which is a straight-up drama with Brad Pitt and myself and Philip Seymour Hoffman, and then The Sitter with David Gordon Green, which is like a R-rated, fucked-up Adventures in Babysitting type movie, you know? Like, those 2 years, to me, are like, all four characters will be unrecognizable from one another, and I'm really prideful in that, you know? Not, I hope that didn't sound dickish, but I'm super, you know, I'm super excited to, you know, take people's expectations and change them, you know?
Well, I mean, what kind of pressure is there on you professionally to maybe take a role that's just, it's money, it's an easy comedy, it's the kind of, you know, dribble that
Boner Party 6 is what
exactly.
I call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Titty School, Titty School 5. Right. Yeah.
Titty School 5.
Yeah.
I'd probably rent that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would too. But, but I mean, is there pressure? I mean, do you feel pressure, like, you know, from your agent maybe, or from, like,
my agents are cool, and the studios, you know, they offer you stuff, and they know you're, you know, look, this position could be over tomorrow that I'm currently lucky enough to be in, and I recognize that. So I realized, and I looked at all the careers of the people I loved and, you know, and respected, and I looked at them and I go, they didn't do a good movie and then immediately do a shitty movie, and I don't need to be super rich or super famous, you know, that's not why I did this. I would have probably gone into finance or something like that out of college if that's what I wanted to do. I really care about this stuff, and I care about movies, and you know, you just have to be strong and not, you know, don't be stupid. Just, you know, freedom of choice is a big responsibility, and I think, you know, I'm lucky enough to not have to take any movie just to pay the rent, so there's no need to be greedy. Just do something if it's going to be good, and I really put a lot of meticulous thought into these decisions. You know?
Also have the advantage of being a writer yourself, right? I mean,
yeah, I mean, that's been a great, you know, for me, I think a lot of times what happens, I think, is actors finish a movie and they go, oh my God, I'm never going to work again, oh my God, you know, even like big, huge actors, and so they'll take something thinking that something else will never come along. But for me, I freak out because I'm a bit of a workaholic the second I finish a movie, going, oh my God, what am I going to do? But I can write the next day and start writing a movie the next day. So I at least doesn't force me to make a bad choice acting-wise, you know? So if I have to take a year off and write, I'll do that. You know?
I mean, are you working on different stuff besides Adventures Handbook? Or?
Yeah, we're getting 21 Jump Street into shape, and, you know, we're going to start that early next year. And Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who directed Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, are directing that. And they just had
He was tweeting from a prom. I don't know if you
saw that.
Yeah,
they did. Oh, no, yeah.
So funny.
Mike Bacall and Phil Lord and Chris Miller have been to, like, two different proms and talked to all these kids in high school, and the stories are, they're just amazing, you know? I think that movie, the best thing that movie has going for it is people's expectations are so low that our movie is already so much better than what shit talkers on the internet think it is. So for us, we're just high-fiving because it's, like, great. That's the best thing you could have is people think your movie sucks, and then it turns out being pretty awesome, you know?
Yeah.
Like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, I would have written it off before seeing it, and then I saw it, and I was like, this movie's great, you know? And so I think Phil and Chris just had a great take on the movie.
But you talk about there's always different, yeah, all these different characters. What is your character going to be like in 21 Jump Street? Sort of, what different kind of part are you playing there?
Yeah, well, that one is, you know, he's, you know, I don't want to get too much into detail because, you know, I don't want to give a whole rundown on, like, what the whole, you know, I don't want to give you the grand total 45-minute pitch of the movie. But basically, you know, we want to make a really funny, grounded high school movie with action set pieces in it, you know? And to me, that's really cool. I really liked the thing that, when they asked me to remake it, I initially went, fuck that, you know, I'm not doing that. That's stupid, you know? And then I thought about it. I watched the show again, revisited it, and the thing I responded to was the concept. Because to me, there's a real Back to the Future element in that you get to go back and relive a very important time period in your life. And that's what I found fascinating. And then the big idea that I had, which Mike Bacall and I cracked, which was, so these guys are 20 cops in their mid-20s, and they've gained all this confidence since high school, and then they go back to high school and they immediately revert back to insecure high school students again. So to me, that was sort of the big idea that we cracked that I really fell in love with about the movie.
And they take it so seriously in the show too. That's what's so great about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not a spoof of the show. It's honestly not. It's not a spoof of the 80s. It's To me, it's great. If I didn't know about it, I would talk shit about it like people on the internet do. But in my opinion, that's the best thing we have going for us, you know?
I like the fact that you were able to work in Back to the Future.
Waiting for it. We did a little talk about Back to the Future 2 over there.
Yeah.
Just sitting here waiting. Yeah. Like, I know it's coming.
Yeah. Have you read the I think Phil turned in a script like this week or last week or something like that. Have you read like...
How do you know that?
I'm friends with Phil.
Oh. Well, why are you interviewing me?
He just told me that he was turning it in.
We turned in a draft like to ourselves, basically. Mike finished a great draft and... Jesus Christ. What are you doing?
Sorry. I just saw him working on it the other day.
Yeah. Well, I worked on it for a while, and
then
I gave it to him.
And I said, just tell Jonathan you did
it. Yeah. No, we've been working, and Mike Bacall is the man. Mike Bacall is a good writer.
With Greek, there's a really interesting thing in that, in a lot of ways, you're sort of the straight guy. Mm-hmm. Not totally. You have funny stuff, but, you know, Russell is the guy who gets to go big and be crazy. You're
right.
Sort of...
normal guy and crazy guy.
Right. So how hard is that for you to sort of do the straight guy thing, but still make sure that you're not just being the boring straight guy, that you're getting your bits and your mind?
Yeah, I think Bill Murray, in a way, a lot of times was a straight guy, and he's funniest guy ever, Or a good example is like Gene Wilder was often a straight guy, but to me made me laugh harder than anybody. And Stiller. Think about Stiller in like Flirting with Disaster, or Stiller in Something About Mary. I mean, those were, or a lot of his movies where he's been, Meet the Parents. I think those are great classic comedy performances where things are happening crazy around him and it's his reactions that are garnering laughs, but he's the emotional anchor of the movie. So, I think being uncomfortable and sort of being out of your element, it's like a fish out of water, garners a lot of laughs, but... Also, I really enjoyed that challenge of having to be the person keeping the story moving as well as having to, be funny as well. I really enjoyed it. I think I was actually really pleased with that element of the movie where I do get laughs and am technically the straight man. I'm not unaware of that. Russell gets to do this grandiose performance, which is really great. And it was an interesting challenge for me. Michael Cera is a great straight man. Like he's another great straight man, So I think Rudd's often a great straight man. So I think there's, tons of examples of comedic people I respect who often do that.
But is it tough on set when Russell gets to go? I mean, you have scenes where you get to go big too.
Right.
But where he gets to go big all the time, is there sort of a thing where you're like, man, he's having a lot of fun?
No, I mean, look, I shove a balloon of heroin up my ass.
Yeah, that great scene with the
dildo shoved in my mouth. I think I had my fair share of a threesome. I have a fair share of comedic fodder in this film.
Nick talked about trying to work in that anal cam too for the whole.
That was my idea. I take full credit for that because Nick had a brilliant idea of the tongue cam that he invented, and then I was like, "Let's." He's very creative. Bob Yeoman shot the movie. He shoots all Wes Anderson films, and he's a brilliant guy. And we were trying to figure out. I was like, he did the tongue cam, and I was just thinking one day when we were doing the scene where he grabs it out, and I was like, what if there was a POV from my asshole shot where you see the balloon inside and you see a hand reach up and grab it out? So I guess it never came to fruition. Something that was oft discussed.
So what was the hardest part for you to shoot?
I think the threesome was probably the most difficult, or the Vegas suite was pretty difficult to shoot, I would say. Just as far as we shot it for a long time, it took forever. That sequence took a very long time to shoot. There's so many characters, fight to be choreographed. It was really hot. Like, they built that suite on a stage, and it was really surprisingly, hot and small for how grandiose it looks on film,
And with a furry dog.
The furry wall, yeah. I have a piece of the furry wall in my house.
What's more choreographed, the stunt scenes or the sex scene?
The sex scene, definitely.
Yeah.
Because, in that situation, and not to give a boring answer, but Russell and I could handle it, obviously, but you really want to be respectful to the actress in the scene to make sure she feels safe and comfortable and not, disrespected or uncomfortable in any way, So we did a lot of blocking to make sure Elizabeth felt cool with everything,
curious what happened with Adventure. When we spoke to you on set, Adventurer's Handbook
was up next.
Like it was going to be going real soon.
Yeah, we basically, you know what happened? We got greenlit, and then we had scheduling conflicts because of Jason Segel and Jason Schwartzman's television show. So they, you know, we basically had to fit it in this window, and their shows went over or whatever, and we just couldn't do it. And then, luckily, Moneyball, I got offered Moneyball shortly after that. You know.
So what is it, one of those projects that's, because sometimes with film, it's like this alchemy of it needs to be perfect, and now that the, you know, the chemistry is a little bit off, do you think it's...
Well, I think we got so lucky in that everyone we wrote it for said yes, which I think very rarely happens. And especially Schwartzman's role is so... I just can't imagine anyone else playing Schwartzman's role. It's just built for him. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I think I, you know, I have to... You know, I'm going to make Moneyball and The Sitter with David Gordon Green. And then Jump Street. And then after that, I want to find the first movie to direct. That's my goal. You know, so... Adventures is something we still love and definitely aren't... like disregarding ever doing it, but you know, we got to see how it comes back together.
You've talked about directing for a long time. Is there a certain genre that you think is going to be your first step?
I don't want to discuss it in that way because then it could end up being something totally different. You know, I have to find something that, you know, being a recognizable actor and you know, I understand that when I do direct a movie, people such as yourselves are going to judge the shit out of me. So, you know, whether I like it or not, it's going to be an extra harsh, judgmental endeavor. You know what I mean? So, for me, I just want to make sure it's done correctly, and I'm not going to just throw together some shitty movie. This is really where I want my career to end up. So, for me, I think a lot of ways I think about it is I just go quality over genre. You know what I mean? And just want it to be good. I just want to
write into hardcore science fiction.
Right, exactly. Yeah. But the point is, you know, I was thinking a lot about it, and you go, the way that movies are heading, you know, the studios are going to make these big, huge movies no matter what. So I was reading on a website the other day saying, people were saying, oh, why is David Fincher maybe going to direct 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea? And I went, that's fucking great that David Fincher's going to direct 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, because they're going to make that movie no matter what. So if I'm going to see it, I'd rather David Fincher be directing it than some guy who sucks. You know what I mean? And, like, to me, you know, that's the way things are going. So to me, it might be interesting to direct a bigger movie. I don't know, you know. I really don't want to commit to any sort of thing. But I'm happy when good directors sign on to big, crazy Hollywood movies, because that's all they're going to end up making, because that's the only thing they're seeing profits on. That in comedies, hopefully.
Well, I'm just curious, are you going to star in what you're going to direct, or are you just going to stay behind the camera?
I don't know. It's going to be circumstantial.
Yeah. You're sort of, you're kind of a comedic encyclopedia. You know a lot about comedy, the history of comedy.
Definitely.
It's so interesting with these two films this summer, with Greek and Cyrus, there's such different characters and different approaches. Can you sort of talk about, you know, your different approaches to the two? While Cyrus is comedic, it's also got a lot of serious stuff going on. Mm-hmm. But actually, so is Greek at the same time. A lot of serious stuff going on, too. So can you talk about the different comedic approaches to the two films?
Well, Cyrus was such a clearly defined character in the script, and then Mark and Jay and I talked about it so much for so long that I just knew who the guy was, and he was very specific, and every joke in that movie, anything that gets a laugh in that movie comes from character.
Right.
You know, it's just a character movie. And you know, so there was a real... that all of my effort in that movie went to remaining true to this interesting character that the three of us had talked about. So nothing was ever... I would never, like, riff a joke or do something that just would be out of character. And the same with Greek. But in Greek, you know, in these bigger... you know, these are big R-rated comedies, you know, with all the big press junket and everything like that. You have a responsibility to the people... you know, the fans of this movie are the reason I get to do any of this. Right. And I am completely appreciative and respectful of that. So, as well as Greek being... having to be grounded in reality and, you know, create a really interesting character, you also have a responsibility to make the audience laugh every few seconds.
Right.
So there's a lot more riffing comedically in a movie like this than in Cyrus, because Cyrus, it's okay if a scene plays long and kind of you get to stay, you know, like in weird moments and explore things like that, because that's just the nature of that kind of movie. And this movie, we have a responsibility to our fans who go see this stuff. We're going to make you laugh your ass off every few seconds, right. You know?
Last question.
What's the next awful thing Carla Gallo is going to do to you in a film?
I don't know. Poor Carla. We took a respected actress from like Mad Men and Carnival and had her have her period on my leg and shove a dildo into my mouth. I mean, no, Carla is amazing. You know, I don't know if you watched Carnival, but she's remarkable in it. And same with Mad Men and Undeclared. And she's a really talented actress. And we're really grateful that she comes in to do these cameos for us because she's so incredibly talented.
It seems to be like reserved for her. It seems like she's just.
Well, we always audition people other than her because we assume she'll be busy. You know, she's a really good actress, and then it's just we have to beg her because no one's as funny as she is.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Honestly, this was the most pleasurable day. Always a pleasure, guys. Yeah, and you were so funny in Heckman, man.
Thank you. Cyrus is so great. I mean,
thank
really
you, man.
Is your best.
Thank you.
Really terrific.